21st. The latest Marquette poll shows a majority of Wisconsinites still support the state's stay-at-home order, but that support is slipping and starting to show a partisan divide. That comes after protests at the Capitol last month calling on lawmakers to reopen the state and its economy. This is not the first time public health measures have sparked a backlash here in the state. Judith Walzer-Levitt is a professor emerita in the Department of Medical History and Bioethics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Her research is included in a new piece from WisContext that looks at the 1894 smallpox riots in Milwaukee and some of the public health lessons to come out of it. She's the author of multiple books, including one on this topic called The Healthiest City, Milwaukee, and the Politics of Health Reform. Judith, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
Well, can you set the stage for us? 1894, signs of smallpox breaking out in Milwaukee. Tell us what we were starting to see there.
Okay. Well, let me say that smallpox was a disease that hit American cities, and Milwaukee was one of them, multiple times in the 19th century. And each time, health departments gained in stature, authority, and powers as a result of the epidemic, because people feared it and was willing to, for example, build an isolation hospital and do other fairly expensive things to help further public health. So in 1984, when smallpox came, I think the health department and people who knew the story thought that the same thing would happen. But instead, riots broke out in the streets and lasted for about a month in the streets of especially the 11th Ward and the 14th Ward on the south side. And so I was very interested to find out why, what was different about this outbreak, and to see if we could learn something from it. So a couple things were different, and a couple things were exactly the same. Now, let me first talk about the ones that were the same. The health commissioner immediately started to isolate people who were sick, which was a very standard procedure, and to vaccinate those who were in contact with the sick people or who had not been vaccinated before. So he launched a vaccination campaign and isolation campaign. And he thought that was just standard procedure, and it was, and he thought everything would be fine. But what he learned was that people on the South Side, and that meant especially immigrant communities, Polish and German, didn't like what he said. And partly it was because he came forcibly to remove their children to the isolation hospital, whereas in other parts of the city, the white native-born parts of the city, he was not forcibly removing children from their families, but was letting them isolate at home. So immediately, the people on the South Side thought that things were not equitable and that they were being discriminated against, and they resisted. So when the ambulance came to take their children, the women especially were out on the streets refusing to allow their children to be taken. Now, some were taken forcibly, but women were out there with salt and pepper, boiling water, baseball bats, anything at hand, that is domestic weapons, to try to resist the health department authorities. So it was a very bad scene in the sense that the disease was probably more widely transmitted because of these riots, but it definitely taught people that fairness and honesty with the people was very important to successful public health.
Right. This perception at reality, it sounds like actually that there were haves and have-nots, and they were being treated very differently by public health authorities. Sounds like a key part of this story.
Exactly. You have it exactly right. And I think that's why, I mean, a lot of the immigrants came to this country thinking that they would be not the subject of government authority or adverse government authority. And here were people in uniform coming to take their children away. It couldn't have been a worse perception. And as you say, perception and reality, they were in fact taking children. And the isolation hospital, which was also located on the south side, they thought was a pest house where people would go to die, not where people would go to get better. So, which was actually probably not the case by 1894. They had just renovated the hospital, but it was still a pretty dangerous place, and they didn't want their children to have to go there.
Another part of the story is you mentioned the vaccine. Now, smallpox ultimately eradicated by vaccine, and I'm glad of that, a nasty disease. What were efforts like to get more people to be vaccinated? What was the resistance to that like in this 1894 outbreak in Milwaukee?
Well, vaccination, you know, it's a very interesting point because if we're all saying that if we had a vaccine for COVID-19, everything would be great. And they had a vaccine for smallpox in 1894 and everything wasn't great. So I think we have to pay attention to that. It was partly that it was unequally administered. That is, the health department tried to force it on the poorer sections of the city and not on the rich who came forward more voluntarily. There was also a very strong anti-vaccination movement in the 19th century that reared its head during this outbreak and that tried to convince people that vaccines were dangerous. They could cause other diseases, they could cause infection, they could cause a reaction that might be an adverse reaction, not the positive one you're looking for. And so there was a lot of fear around that. And it's partly a question of how information is transmitted, and not just the information itself. So I also studied an outbreak of smallpox in New York City in 1947, which also had vaccination and isolation as the prime messages from the health department, and yet they were able to voluntarily vaccinate 6,350,000 New Yorkers within a period of weeks. So, and the reason they were able to do it and Milwaukee wasn't, I think, does have to do with how they gave the information, how they worked in cooperation with community groups, with the various foreign language newspapers, and really made an effort to show how fair they were distributing the vaccine and the other policies. Whereas in Milwaukee, Milwaukee had a new health commissioner, and he at one point said when he was being interviewed, "I'm only trying to execute the law here, and I'll break heads if I have to do it." And that was sort of his response. It had lack of compassion, complete lack of compassion, and made people not trust him. And that was part of the reason trust is so important to public health work. And to get trust, you have to be honest, you have to be equitable, and you have to be informative in a way that people can actually hear the message, if it's in their language, for example, but also hear it in terms of that you are acting for their good, for the public's health. Not misusing your power and authority.
Talking to Judith Walzer-Levitt, author of the book The Healthiest City, Milwaukee and the Politics of Health Reform, looking at an 1894 smallpox outbreak in Milwaukee and public health lessons learned from it. And let's get to those lessons, because you, in your book, I think, talk about Milwaukee over the half century after this outbreak as in some ways a model American city when it came to public health. What did they change?
That's right. I call the book The Healthiest City because Milwaukee won a health contest so much that they were actually had to be taken off the list so that other cities could have a chance. That was a contest that the U.S. Public Health Service ran to compare various cities in America in the 1920s and 1930s. And Milwaukee won every time until they put Milwaukee on an honor roll and said they couldn't compete anymore because it was too good. Now, they were looking at measures of infant mortality, general mortality, sanitation, sewerage systems, water systems, and those were the things that Milwaukee had really worked very hard on over the course of the last part of the 19th century and the first half of the 20th century. They put a lot of money into building good sewerage systems, good water systems, filtering the water, making sure that Milwaukee could be a sanitary place that would not be a place where infectious diseases could be easily transmitted environmentally. And so Milwaukee paid a lot of attention to that. The 1894 epidemic was really the only example where they really moved backward in terms of getting positive health reform efforts in place. And so really from 1867 1937, when the health department is founded, until the 1930s, when it was taken off the honor roll, was put on an honor roll and taken out of the competition to be the healthiest city in America. Milwaukee put a lot of money into health care, and that was even furthered in 1910 when the socialists won the mayoralty and the majority in the Common Council, because one of their planks in the platform that on which they won was free health care for all Milwaukeeans. Now, that never came to be. The socialists didn't stay in power, except for the mayor stayed for a good half of the century, but the Common Council never had a socialist majority anymore. But health reform continued to be something that was valued by almost everybody in Milwaukee. And they were willing, politicians were willing to put money into it and to pay attention to the health of the whole city, not just a part of it. And it really paid off. And Milwaukee was really a terrific place to live in terms of health in the first half of the 19th century. And unfortunately, as I'm sure your listeners are aware, money in public health infrastructure really started decreasing a lot in the late part of the 20th century and into the 21st century. And Milwaukee has now been among the worst on many health public health indices today. But for a good long time, public health was a political priority as well as a health priority. And
we'll
it showed.
Leave it there. We'll leave it there for now. Judith, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank
That's
you.
That's Judith Walzer-Levitt, Professor Emerita at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She's with us today to talk about the 1894 smallpox riots in Milwaukee and what they can teach us about what works and doesn't work in response to a public health crisis. You can find more online at wiscontext.org.